His plan prevails. That's why I love the story of Esther. Not only does it have a great plot that keeps you on the edge of your seat, but when it comes to the final scene, things turn out right. Things end well. God wins. Doesn't it drive you nuts to go to a movie that just stops? You walk out thinking, well, I guess this is the intermission. But you know it's the end. Or the end of a book that just leaves you empty, wondering. You keep turning, thinking maybe after a few blank pages there'll be a better ending, but it's not there. If you're like me, you like things that wrap up neatly and have a triumphant, God-honoring ending. And if you're like me, you love it when truth wins out, when right wins over wrong, when good reigns supreme. Again, that's what I like so much about Esther. A final glimpse at the story after the fact. Now, King Ahasuerus laid a tribute on the land and on the coastlands of the sea, and all the accomplishments of his authority and strength, and the full account of the greatness of Mordecai to which the king advanced him, are they not written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai the Jew was second only to King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and in favor with the multitude of his kinsmen, one who sought the good of his people, and one who spoke for the welfare of his whole nation. Esther chapter 10, verses 1 through 3. End of the book. And it ends like it ought to end. What do we have here? Well, to begin with, we have the same king that we started with, King Ahasuerus. We have the same kingdom, where he reigns from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces. That hasn't changed. We have the same country, Persia, and the same capital city, Susa. But some things have changed. Vashti is no longer queen. Esther is queen. And she is a queen who has won her husband's overwhelming respect and loyalty. Haman was once second in command, but he is gone forever. Mordecai is alive and well. Wicked plans have been thwarted. Corruption has been rooted out. Evil has been fully dealt with. To make matters even better, Mordecai has been promoted by the king, and he is now second in command, second only to King Ahasuerus. Verse 3 yields some helpful information that explains why Mordecai is described as a man of greatness in verse 2. We're told four things about him. First, he was great among the Jews. Second, he was in favor with the multitude of his kinsmen. Third, he sought the good of his people. And fourth, he spoke for the welfare of his whole nation. Not too shabby an epitaph. If all's well that ends well, we'd have to agree this is well. You have to remember, this was a Gentile country where Gentiles ruled. The Jews who lived here were only a remnant, and they were here only by the permission of the government. They could have been killed when their homeland was conquered, but they were allowed to live, and permitted to live on in this land of Persia. Now, to our amazement, and certainly to the amazement of many of the people of Persia, both Jew and Gentile, a Jew is second in command to King Ahasuerus. The one who is exalted to the place of authority in Persia is a surprising choice. Who would have ever guessed that a Jew would become the prime minister in a Gentile land? It would have made the headlines of the Susa Daily Sun, "Gentile king chooses new prime minister, a Jew." That's the surprising part. It doesn't say, "King Ahasuerus, a Gentile, promoted Mordecai, the Jew." Of course not, because being a Gentile didn't make news. Being a Jew did. That's surprising. But you see, God is the one in charge, not the king. All this brings me to three overall observations, which yield three principles for our own lives from this ancient book. The first principle, when God wins, the people he uses are often unexpected. This reminds me of one of my all-time favorite Psalms, Psalm 78, which concludes with this comment about David. He, God, also chose David, his servant, and took him from the sheepfolds, from the care of the ewes with suckling lambs he brought him, to shepherd Jacob his people, and Israel his inheritance. So he shepherded them according to the integrity of his heart and guided them with his skillful hands. Psalm 78, verses 70 through 72. What a surprise! For almost 40 years, the Israelites had experienced the reign of a king who was tall, dark, and probably handsome. King Saul, who, though he failed in character, at least looked regal. The people had selected Saul, partly because of his appearance. They became accustomed to such a stature. Until God slipped his hand into the ranks of the Jews and picked an unknown young shepherd. Surprising choice.